Coming to you from Phoenix, Arizona, this is Monica, and welcome to the Home Health Occupational Therapy Explorer podcast as a creation from Till and Water. Are you a home health OT feeling a bit uninspired or overwhelmed or unresourced, but ready for change? Then stay tuned because we are dedicated to bringing you inspiration for possibility and nourishment of your home health OT mindset. So let's reinvent together starting here today and dig into this episode recorded in 2019. This archived yet priceless episode is part of a wrap-up from season 2, so please pardon and enjoy any dated references to the world pre-COVID. Welcome back and let's dig in.
Super excited to have Meredith Kasten on the podcast today. Meredith,
hi.
Welcome to the podcast.
Yay. Thank you so much for having me. I am really pumped to be here.
I'm so excited.
Me too. So
Meredith is, I'm going to give my layperson description of some of the things I see you doing in our community.
Yes.
In the home health crowd, because so much of what is happening in home health is you're not seeing it. If you know a home health OT, then you're a little bit lucky to know about it. But otherwise it's really trying to, yeah, bring together a group of people and information to get that out. And
yeah. So
I love that you've done that. And I learn more about people too, because you send out weekly emails with, or whenever the posts come up for a little bit of a story and background on somebody who's got some type of outside the box experience. And so will you also talk a little bit about non-clinical, because there was a part of me that was like, in full disclosure, I was kind of like, I'm non-clinical because I'm in home health.
Yeah.
And like, maybe some people would think that, but also some people wouldn't. So can you say a little bit about the term non-clinical?
Sure. So the way I describe it, it's not scientific. It's literally what I just kind of decided to use because there really isn't a definition for it that I know of that's kind of sanctioned. But yeah. I consider non-clinical to be any sort of career in healthcare where you are using your background and experience, but you're not actually directly treating patients. So there is one crossover area other than home health, which I can't wait to delve into because I think it's like an offshoot. It's kind of somewhere in that gray area, in that shrouded, murky area. But another area like that is telehealth. But the ones that I would consider are more like a traditional non-clinical role would be something along the lines of clinical informatics, where say they want someone with an OT or a PT background, but they also, you're really not doing patient care. You're interfacing with clinicians and you're interfacing with the EMR or EHR heads, but you're really doing stuff that's not clinical in nature. But without your clinical background, you wouldn't be nearly as good at this job. So there are a lot of jobs out there. Another common one is a rehab liaison, sometimes called a clinical liaison. And another common one would be a utilization reviewer. And I'm starting with the ones where you really typically need a license to even get these jobs. And so those are the ones that I consider kind of like the classic non-clinical roles. But there are tons where there's sort of a lateral move within healthcare. Sometimes you need the license, sometimes you don't. Sometimes you need the education, sometimes you don't. But if you have that background, it just makes it a lot easier to do the job. And you're probably going to walk in with a higher salary to start out with.
Yeah, which is really amazing to foster and encourage therapists to think outside the box of what's possible.
Yeah.
And this is where I feel like there is just so much overlap that I do feel like truly the average person who is debating possibly coming into home health is also this potentially really great fit for another type of non-clinical work that it's like, well, just because I think if you're going to be a good fit for home health, you do have to understand that half of your time isn't going to be with a therapist or with a patient, because you're either going to be driving or scheduling or doing documentation, which I guess is any clinical job. But that there are these elements or dynamics, perhaps we'll call them, that are not as predictable as, say, skilled nursing.
Yes.
And, you know, and a part of me wonders, you know, what some of the things are that you're hearing from people that maybe it's one of the traits that they've had to develop or something.
Yes.
That's been helpful either as an attitude or as an action that really helps them bridge these gaps into brand new territories. Because I think that's going to be similar for home health.
Oh, 100%. In fact, I think you and I might have mentioned this, or we were chatting about this when we were on the phone another time, but I call home health, OT and PT, I call it the non-clinical incubator, because so many people who want to go into a non-clinical role, sort of their last stop on the clinical train, for better or for worse, tends to be home health, because mm-hmm. it is the most independent. It is the one with the most yep. flexibility in many ways. And mm-hmm. I think it's the one that is the, like you just pointed out, it's the least amount of clinical care per hours that you spend in the day. And then the rest of the time, you're really building a lot of these non-clinical skills that are super yeah. transferable. But the challenge is just showing an employer how they're transferable, how what you do transfers. And I actually just worked with a new grad who she knew in school, by the way, that she wasn't really feeling patient care, which was kind of mm-hmm. tragic, because she was in one of those 6-year programs where you go straight from mm. undergrad to grad school. Oh, and so she yeah. knew, and we chatted 2 years ago before I ever launched the non-clinical PT, but that was back when people were already kind of seeing my name as a writer. And she reached out and was saying, I don't know what I want to do. And she ended up doing travel and home health specifically within travel. And the skills mm-hmm. she built, flexibility, adaptability, being yes. able to learn on the fly, becoming a self-starter, mm. all of those things, mm. they have taken her. She landed a sweet, sweet non-clinical role recently where I was like, oh my gosh, I can't. I mean, I'm not shocked because she's awesome, but I'm also shocked because she's so young and so new. And this role she landed is really cool. And that's why I think that, yeah, I think that home health is the perfect launch pad. But it's also kind of sad, because when people go into home health, I think it is the most functional place we can treat patients. And it is the most fulfilling, at least when I was treating, I found it to be the most fulfilling in many ways. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so it's sad, because there are aspects of home health that I think people go into it because they say, oh, I want to treat patients functionally, and maybe I want to build some non-clinical skills. But the realities, some of the ones that you've talked about on the show, I think some of the realities of the challenges being an occupational or physical or probably even speech therapist
yeah,
in the role,
yeah.
it's like it drives people away ultimately. Those things drive people to say, you know what? I'm done. I'm packing up the bags. I'm going non-clinical. So it's bittersweet in many ways.
It is. And I think, it's part of the inspiration for the podcast, is like, how can we support each other in the midst of a challenging and fulfilling journey? And also, I guess, helping people understand if their breaking point has come.
Yeah.
You know, because I think for all of us in life, it's about being able to become intuitive enough that we just know what our journey is calling for.
Yeah.
And whether that's home health or whether that's like mic drop into, you know, some type of 100% non-clinical, you know, no patient care position, and that we can be in tune enough to ourselves to know what we're called to do.
Yes.
And so that, I think, is perhaps one of the trickiest parts. And I'm grateful that, you know, part of us coming together is to try to create community support around the journey, like emphasis on the journey too, because I feel like, you know, with whatever role people take, whether people do decide home health, whether they do decide non-clinical, that we can just like accept the choices we make in our lives with a lot of compassion and like have fun with it.
Yes.
You know, like we're here once for who, you know, who knows how long.
Yes. True that.
YOLO.
YOLO, yes.
So there was a part that we talked a little bit about that I think would be valuable to just bring to conversation, about how you and I both had this like tinge of people leaving patient care.
Yes.
And it sounds like even the people who leave, that there's this like, whether it's a moment of grief or like shame or this like, should we talk about this? Like if we're trained as therapists, and I hate even using the word should.
Yeah.
And that it's like, well, what about, you know, and this is part of the background for the podcast, is like for all the people that want to do home health and that maybe have never done it before, but also like want to have a high practice or like high quality practice and try to connect up with other people so that they're not just like, you know what, F it, I'm out, you know, like I don't want to work with patients anymore. And so I guess like, and I don't even know where to begin this conversation, Meredith, but I know that it's something that I remember you saying too, of just like, that there is this, like something comes up in the midst of debating where therapists fit best.
Yeah. And I think a great way to look at it is that your career can be very fluid. And I think one of the reasons that people do burn out is that when you are in patient care, again, with exception to home health, because there is more variety in the day, but generally speaking, when you're in patient care, you're either treating or you're documenting, and you're not really doing a whole lot of strategizing. You're not really doing a lot of visionary work.
This is where we dedicate a moment in the podcast to support creating a diverse, equitable, and inclusive world, starting within our own lives. We understand that this is a journey and a commitment, not a one-time act. A super helpful resource and community can be found at COTAD, which stands for Coalition of Occupational Therapy Advocates for Diversity. This is a statement from their website. COTAD believes in action-oriented organizing to hold our profession accountable for creating a more diverse, equitable, and inclusive society. We are calling all members of the OT community to join us in sparking dialogue and igniting change to promote occupational justice. So we hope you check out their info in the show notes and stay strong in your continued work in these areas.
I'm going to get a little bit hippy dippy here, but I know you'll love it. But I love this personality test called the Enneagram, because so the Enneagram is fascinating, because so many people who come through my site, go through my course, score a type 3 on the Enneagram, and that's not by any means the only type. In fact, recently I've been getting more variety. It used to be like all type 3s at the beginning. Huh. But type 3 is the achiever. And with the Enneagram test, you can take this test, and it tells you your type. And I'm really, really simplifying it for the sake of the podcast. But basically, you can then read about your type and find out healthy levels and unhealthy levels. So if someone's a type 3 and they're getting their fix, like the type 3 needs their jollies, and they need their jollies include getting lots of recognition at work, lots of opportunities to excel, lots of opportunities to really kind of build and create, but in a way, in a way where they feel like they've achieved something. I mean, to simplify it, it's the achiever. And if they're not getting those things, then they will feel sick. They will feel like unwell in their job. And if they're getting those things, they'll feel on top of the world, and they'll be like the best versions of themselves. And some of the most beautiful, sweet people, one person who we both know in common, are achievers. And so it's really interesting, because you'll see these people who go into therapy because they want to be the best possible clinician, and they want to do the best possible thing, and they want to get like every certification, and they want to be the best therapist. And yes, they need recognition, but it might just mean a thank you from the patient. It might not mean, you know, accolades or anything, but I think because of the climate of healthcare, we're not always thanked for our efforts. We're not always getting these things. I'm not personally an achiever, but I can totally understand and relate the need, you know, to the need of growing and getting better and feeling like your career, you're sort of making more money every year, and you're growing in your career. I mean, that is the normal human need for your career. And so a lot of these wonderful, talented therapists who went into it because they do care about people, but they also have this innate need to like grow in their profession, they feel like they can't get their satisfaction anymore. And so that's when they'll end up leaving patient care, and then they'll go into roles where they're doing a little bit more strategizing. They're doing a little bit more kind of high level thinking. And it's not that you can't do that as a therapist. It's just that it's not rewarded. And I don't know. I guess I'm kind of going off topic a little bit, because I can't even remember the original topic. But the reason I wanted to bring that up, and I'm just so passionate about understanding your Enneagram type and just understanding your needs, is that I feel like it helps you choose your setting if you want to stay in patient care. It helps you understand the type of employer that you need, because some people, they are perfectly happy flying under the radar, going in, clocking in, doing, I don't want to say the bare minimum, but just not getting like recognition and not necessarily not necessarily doing the best that they possibly can do, but they feel like, okay, by going in and clocking in and kind of showing up consistently, they're being their best selves. And because of that, I mean, there's a space for that type of therapist in healthcare. I think the type who clocks in, they put their head down, they do their work and they leave, and they kind of almost have that shield up. And, but I think so much of it is just knowing who are you, what do you need to stay healthy in patient care? And some people, none of these things are going to work. It's like that's where it comes back to the achievers. For some people, that none of these things are going to fill that need. And so in the case of our mutual friend, I mean, this person has built, I don't want to say her name because I don't want to, you know, just in case.
Yeah.
But basically, I mean, she's built this incredible platform for therapists. And so you have these people where someone might go, oh, you know, they just need recognition. They need this. And it's the opposite. If anything, they just want to build something where they feel like they're making a true change. And then they do. They leave patient care and they create these tools and these resources to create these wonderful, helpful platforms. And all of a sudden, their needs are being filled. Their cup is being filled.
Yeah.
And then they're helping so many patients just by virtue of helping other therapists be better at what they do.
Yeah. I really actually appreciate this approach in hearing it that way, because I think, you know, I think especially once you start stirring the pot of certain projects, at least for me, I start to get questions that come to me that I'm like, I wonder if people might have this question or if other people maybe had this initial response. And as a passionate therapist, my initial response was kind of this like, oh, like, don't go non-clinical. Like, we can't have good people leaving the field.
Yeah.
And that there was just this like, you know, forming a fist and looking skyward, you know, response. And then, you know, there's, as I've kind of gotten to talk to more people and even realizing that like what I'm doing with the podcast, it is a non-clinical thing.
Yes.
And I get so much satisfaction from it. And my hope is that by creating this resource, it allows people who maybe otherwise would have left home health to stay plugged in, because it's an opportunity to explore excellence. It's an opportunity to like have recognition, kind of it's a way to have these things. But the point is that as I look around, and even there's an interview I did with Karen Vance, and Karen is, I think, truly a thought leader in home health OT, and realizing, you know, Karen is not doing direct patient care right now.
Interesting.
She's doing more consulting work, and she understands the OASIS side, the documentation side, the Medicare side of things, which is actually what I think a huge portion, at least I know for myself, I am like so hungry to hear about.
Yes.
So I have a mindset shift of, you know, like we are all called to different things, and that's to like take the shame off of non-clinical, and that it's really about if we're using our skill set to serve a greater good, then who is anybody to judge that, you know?
Oh yeah.
Including ourselves, of ourselves, right?
Oh, absolutely. And I love that you've come full circle, I guess, or whatever the expression would be, but I love that you've come to that conclusion, because I think that many people who do pursue non-clinical roles, they're doing it because they're so frustrated by the realities of patient care. And it's not that they don't like treating patients. I mean, even sometimes I'll say it flippantly. I'll be like, oh, patient care, I'm so glad to be out of it. But I'm not glad to be done actually treating the patients. The actual work of helping somebody walk, or the actual work of helping somebody become more functional or get out of bed, that will never stop feeling really, really wonderful. But it was all the other stuff that goes with it. And so with the woman that you just mentioned, and with a couple of people who have featured on my site, one I've released the spotlight, but the other one I'm still working on, both of them, it's so interesting to hear what they have to say, because in fact, the woman whose spotlight I'm editing today, she was saying her absolute favorite thing in the world was patient care. But for her, it was time. It was a time in her life when she had the opportunity to take on this role that it's the perfect fit for her personality. She also loves educating. She's, I'm not sure how old she is, but she's got a college age daughter. And so she's no spring chicken in the sense that I'm sure her body isn't going to appreciate if, you know, she's staying in patient care forever and ever. Of course, being in home health is easier on your body, but still mm-hmm. it's not, I think it's one of those things where you have your reasons for wanting to leave. And hers, it was a combination of, she didn't say anything about the age thing, so it might not have even been that, but it was definitely a factor of wanting to travel. She had a daughter going off to college. The timing seemed right. This perfect job that made use of all of her interests and skills popped up, and she was like, hey, cool. Whereas in other cases, people are looking for it. They're actively looking. This woman, it literally fell in her lap. Someone told her about the job and said, you'd be perfect for this.
I want to introduce you to our sponsor, The Wellness Common. So Steph at The Wellness Common is based out of Omaha, Nebraska. And what I love about The Wellness Common is the authenticity and the practicality of talking nutrition and fitness and lifestyle. Steph has a gift for bringing the most complicated of all of those areas into an incredibly practical way of collaborating with whoever she's working with. And yes, I've worked with Steph. I've worked with her at another tough juncture point in my life, and she was one of the coaches that really helped me go to the next level. And she did so without judgment and with a sense of humor and with incredible knowledge, be it her training in functional medicine or hormones or digestion, like you name it. This woman is so well educated and also so down to earth and just a fun human. So if you're looking for a coach, whether that's for nutrition or concerns about hormones, digestion, life in general, or just how to make or up level your nutrition game without that having to be pretentious or over the top or overwhelming, I highly recommend you check out Steph at thewellnesscommon.com, or you can also go to her website. I just can't say enough about Steph at thewellnesscommon.com. So check out thewellnesscommon.com.
I just think everybody's got their own story. Everybody's got their own needs and their own reasons. And I hear more shame, more people kind of talking about it being so terrible when it's a newer grad. And I get it, because I think for newer grads, yes, they never really got a chance to try to love patient care. I guess you could look at it that way. But in the case of my friend, the one who went through that program, and she took my course. And so I consider her a friend because she happens to live here in San Diego. So I see her now socially, but I met her through pretty much coaching her. And she knew from the time she was a student that she had this brain that made her want to do something else. And then, so you get all sorts. You get the ones who are in school and they're like, I find it fascinating from a really clinical standpoint. I'm kind of speaking like I'm her, but it's like, oh, I find this fascinating. I think patient care is really interesting, but I also know that my brain works in the sense, again, speaking for her, but my brain works in a very problem solving way. And I've seen it now that we're friends and I hang out with her socially. I see how her brain works, and she's a total problem solver. And yes, problem solving is a huge part of patient care, but it's also, in her case, I think she wants so badly to fix broken systems. So she came to San Diego as a traveler and went into this kind of broken system here, into this really well-known healthcare system. But the system itself was so broken. And she was like, I don't know how people function. It's fear-based. It's and so it's interesting because someone like her, you know, she likes patient care and she enjoys getting people better. But she's known since she was like in her early 20s that she wants to fix the problems in the healthcare system. And why can't she do that with her DPT or with her, you know, with her OT degree or what?
Yeah. So. I think I think what I'm hearing and sensing more that you're doing is really helping people have permission to just honor their non-traditional journey.
Yeah.
You know, and that it really is okay to explore what might be coming up for us as therapists and to not have to feel bad about what may be like discontent wherever we are. And I think, you know, something in the first episode of season two that I mentioned was a long time ago, someone mentioned to me, like, are you running towards something? Or are you running away? Because when we run away, it'll show up again.
Yeah.
But if it's a more powerful move, whatever the move is, if you actually are really clear about what do you want? And so at this juncture for both people, you know, in discernment of home health or non-clinical or wherever you're at, I would just really challenge you to also get clear of, like, if you know you're discontent about where you are, what are you wanting?
Yes.
And like, what is going on within you? Is it that you want greater flexibility? Is it that you want to try home health and just need some like support and inspiration? Or is it that you're like, you know what, I am just done with the healthcare system? Or is it, I'm just exhausted and I need to learn how to take care of myself because I do want to do patient care? Because I think that I will say that conversation also isn't happening as much as I wish it would be.
Yeah.
About what if, and this is inspiration for the podcast. So if this is you, you know, resonating with this, like, please stay tuned. Granted, I don't know the order of podcast releases at this exact moment, but there is more content coming about the person who's in healthcare who is like, I actually love patient care. I mean, there are days I want to pull my hair out, but I do love working with patients and I'm really close to burnout. How do I stay here? Is it possible to stay in Western healthcare and represent from a place of kind of being a light worker of self-care and like putting your needs first and being grounded and doing traditional client care?
Yes. Yes.
So, yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that because it just reminded me of the whole oxygen mask thing that people always mention.
Yes.
But I've seen so many therapists where we go into it because we want to help people. And it's so funny. I was at a conference recently and we met this doctor. There were three of us who are kind of online PT entrepreneur types. And we were all at this same conference, but it was nothing. There were very few healthcare people there. It was an online kind of a business conference. And there was a physician there. And he said, so why did you become a PT? And all of us were like in unison to help people. And it was just so funny to hear that come out of all of our mouths and know that none of us are in patient care anymore. But it's also, it's very telling because I think that like, yeah, you can totally help people by staying in patient care. You have to kind of help yourself first. You have to put your oxygen mask on first. And for some people, I would say a big one is learning, at least from a home health perspective, learning time management. And you had written an article on a website once that I read, about time management and documentation. And I was like, yes, queen. Because honestly, when I was in home health, I was like in and out within a couple of months because I was like, F this noise. I could not manage my time. I'm not good at time management in general. And it was just a cluster when I was trying to do it with home health because mostly I think it was lack of training. And I don't mean to buck the responsibility of it, but in both cases, I was kind of a relief therapist. And so I wasn't taken through the full training process.
Yeah.
No one sat down with me and said, here's how to document effectively. Here's the flow. And I think every single person, you mentioned flow a lot, and I love that. And I think everyone who is trained in home health needs to be taught the flow. They need to be taught how to manage their time. They need to be taught. I loved that episode where you were like, here are the five tools. And one of them was how to get from point A to point B most effectively. If you're not taught those things and you're not, and people aren't listening to your podcast, a normal Joe or Jane like me, like I was a few years ago going into home health, I mean, it was a cluster. It was terrible
because
we don't know. I mean, if no one's teaching you, you don't know. You just hear, oh, home health is cool. It's functional. I loved treating patients in home health.
Yeah.
Loved it.
It's magical.
It's magical. Mm-hmm. It was great helping this like 95-year-old woman garden. Oh my gosh. How cool is that? Right.
Right.
So fun. And it's fun. And then I would get home and have mountains of paperwork at night because I didn't know how to manage my freaking days. And I was also, I mean, part of it is I think I was making the mistake of accepting assignments that were like all the way in Timbuktu and then in South Timbuktu.
Yeah.
So that was part of it. But I think even just training people when they take on home health to understand just how different it is. But then those, I mean, tying it all back to the non-clinical thing, those are the skills that you learn when that are transferable to non-clinical yep. roles. I mean, time yep. management,
flexibility,
yes, adaptability, just the yep. ability to communicate with key stakeholders, to answer yep. to multiple stakeholders. You're yep. answering to physicians, yep. you're answering to patients, you're answering to families. That is so challenging. And what I see is one of the big mistakes people make and why people do not have success when they try and get into non-clinical roles is that they don't understand how to take these wonderful, really high level communication skills, which, let's face it, therapists are some of the best communicators out there, phenomenal mm-hmm. communicators. And that's what makes mm-hmm. most people successful at a job, is being a good communicator. I mean, unless you're literally writing all day, every day, and even then you have to communicate with your editor. But unless you're right. doing the kind of role where you literally never interface with people, which is super rare, like engineering type of roles. But even then, my husband's an engineer. He communicates like half the day. I mean,
yeah.
basically, people need to know how freaking good we are at that. People need to know how good we are at time management. I mean,
yeah.
honestly, I learned time management after leaving patient care. Once I worked in a startup, and that was what taught me a lot of the skills that I have to like deal with time management. But when I was a therapist, I mean, I was terrible. Everywhere I went, I was like documenting deep into the night and everything. And so you kind of have to learn that. And if you don't learn it, then I don't know. I'm rambling again. Yeah.
No. It's actually super valuable though. And I think, you know, there's, when I think of, okay, for the person who's listening is like, oh my gosh, I can't do home health because I don't have time management. And it's like, maybe, I mean, like, I wouldn't write it off if you think that you don't have time management, because I think Meredith, like what you're saying, you didn't really have good training necessarily mm-hmm. in a process of it. And I know I was super fortunate to have an amazing mentor when I started, who both the mentor and the company were wonderful for it. And I think it's something that I'll try to talk more about too, because it can be so overwhelming. And something that I'll say just like really quick right here is that one thing alone that definitely changes my practice and mental health immediately is trying to take even 10 minutes after a session to capture as much of the high level thinking of it as possible. And that I always put my vital signs in during the visit so that at the end of the day, if anything, I'm cleaning up, you know, like maybe just one or two things in the notes, but that most notes are at least 50% done,
yeah.
if not 100% done. And that by taking those 10 minutes after a visit, that like, and literally sometimes I'll put my alarm on my phone, because there's a part of me that's like, 10 minutes is not going to make a difference. And I will tell you, it makes a hell of a difference, yeah. especially in home health. 10 minutes after a visit, a lot of times the note's done. And those 40 minutes sprinkled throughout the day are going to be hella valuable when the time comes that you're done.
Yeah.
And it's the end of the day where you're like, what did we do in there?
Yes.
And all I want to do is cook, or like go be with my babe, or like go for a hike,
yes.
you know? So like this part of this podcast is also like, let me help support and inspire you so that you can go play, because the more we are going play sooner, like the better our healthcare system is going to be.
Yes. Yes.
So, oh man, Meredith, well, we could certainly keep beating the drum, and I know we're coming close on time. And so I just want to say, like, for the people who want more information from you and who are like, you know what, this is really kind of piquing my interest, this non-clinical stuff, where can people find you in your community?
Sure. So the easiest way to find me is thenonclinicalpt.com. No dashes, no spaces or anything like that, or periods in the domain name, just thenonclinicalpt.com. You can go onto the resources page from there, just through the navigation bar. And if you scroll down a little bit, you can find links to my different Facebook groups. And that's where I'd say the community aspect is. So I have one group called Non-Clinical Networking for Rehab Professionals. That's the best place to ask questions, network with other non-clinical professionals. As I was mentioning, one of the guys that I featured recently on the site is a member of that group. He's a home health therapist who then went into kind of quality control. And awesome. So I try to have the people who I spotlight join that group so that people can ask them questions. And then I have a second group that's for job seekers. And that one is also listed on the resources page. And that one's just, I go in there and I post jobs. Basically, when I find cool jobs, I try to do 3 jobs a day, 5 days a week. So on weekdays, but sometimes on a holiday, I'll skip it sometimes. And sometimes I'll drop extra ones in the weekends. But yeah, it's a great place to just kind of browse and see what's out there. And I really stick to putting jobs in there where you need your degree. There are other groups out there on Facebook that are all about kind of entrepreneurship. They're all about things like, you know, becoming a real estate agent and things like that. I think that's wonderful. But my goal really is to keep people in healthcare, because it's kind of like, okay, you can be really unhappy with like how things are in the country, and it's tempting to be like, I'm going to move to New Zealand. And it's challenging to not want to just flee at times from healthcare, from the country, or from whatever is going badly. But my feeling is, if you're ready for a change from patient care, because we didn't even touch on this, but there are certain Enneagram types and personality types that are more susceptible to the emotional burdens of patient care. All we touched on was the achiever. But I want to, you know, just real quickly, I'm a variety seeker. I just need variety. So for me, entrepreneurship's a great fit. For helpers tend to like to stay in patient care because they get their jollies, they get their fix from the direct patient care. But then there are all these different other types. There are 9 types. And there are several others that keep popping up. And they're the ones who say, you know, I just really need to be doing challenging. For example, there's one called the challenger. So there are some people who are like, I just need to be challenging the status quo. And those people, I want them to stay in healthcare, because if all of our good people flee and they do become real estate agents, or they do just do something totally out there, I mean, it's wonderful, because you know that we're good at chatting with people. So of course we'll probably kill it in real estate. No judgment at all. Do it. But I want those people to take that ability to communicate and that ability to just do things and help people and problem solve and see things from the user focus lens and look at things from, look at problems from multiple perspectives. That is what we do. That's what we're so good at, is seeing things from like 9 different perspectives.
Yes.
So please keep that in healthcare. If you aren't super disgusted by healthcare, at least consider informatics, consider working for insurance companies. I know there's sometimes people think they're the evil empire, and they're not, you know, it's basically teaching people to document with meaning versus just say, continue treatment as tall, continue TX as tall. And basically just giving more meaning to our documentation. And we need therapists working in there, because in many cases, nurses are the ones reviewing the notes, and they don't even know half the time what we're doing. Some of them do, but a lot of them don't. And so that's my soapbox. And so please join these communities if you're interested. If you check the resources page, there are all sorts of different things on there. I have links to different courses. I didn't even mention things like writing, but if you're interested in becoming a writer, I try to put links to the different resources that you might need. And some of those, I do have my online course, but you don't need to take the course if you are just shopping around and you're just really happy in patient care, but you're just kind of non-clinical curious. Join the community and just kind of, join the community and just kind of see what people have to say. Because the way I always look at non-clinical work is, it took me 2 years to get out of patient care successfully. And I made all these mistakes and all of these missteps. And now I have kind of a system, and the system is not all, you know, rigid. It's basically saying, when you're in your clinical job, start thinking about the skills that you can take on that would maybe transfer to other routes. And that's why I say join the community, because you'll get an idea of what the different people are talking about. You know, someone might say, I'm in quality control. And then if you're like a type 4 and you hate being told what to do, then that might not fit your needs at all. But if you're type 1, the reformer, and you love rules and regulations and you just want to do the right thing, you might be like, yes, quality control, compliance, come to me. And so then that gives you the opportunity when you're in your role to start taking on just a little extra responsibility here and there. Maybe just pick up some chart audits when things are slow, or maybe just help out with the accreditation side and help out the person who runs the company with checking in on people's licensure and their certifications. Oh, is everybody up to date? It's really kind of simple, accreditation, things like that. just take on a little bit of extra responsibility, and it's incredible how far that will take you on your resume.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that's
an experience.
Yeah.
And networking.
Networking. Oh my gosh, so huge. And even getting on your job seekers. If you work for a large company that is kind of a hospital system with home health on the side, sign up for job alerts, even if you have zero interest in shopping around for jobs, because you'll start getting an idea of the jobs that are out there. And you can start seeing, are some of these ones where you're like, oh my gosh, that should be a therapist. Are they going to RNs? And if so,
yeah,
it gives you the opportunity to kind of think, okay, is this an area where I can start advocating and start saying, this, you know, RNs are wonderful, but why are they doing a job that's kind of overseeing therapists? Or why isn't a therapist considered for a job that's overseeing therapists? So yeah. I think it's just interesting and important on all these levels. Yeah, to just start thinking about it now. You could seriously, and to make Monica happy, don't leave patient care or don't do it yet. You know, give it your all. Really get inspired, get excited about it. But then do what she's doing. I mean, build a website on the side. Build a podcast on the side, because then it's kind of just not having all your eggs in one basket. God forbid if you get sick or you get injured and you can't treat patients anymore, it's really nice to have those extra non-clinical skills. So that's my soapbox. Sorry for the ramble.
No, that's all right.
I'm such a rambler.
I think I heard the mic drop.
Boom.
Well, and I feel like a take-home message from today is really honor where you're at.
Yes.
You know, as a therapist, Meredith and I support you with just being true to yourself.
Yes.
That, you know, if it's time to make a switch, start getting information. You don't have to be stuck YOLO. So find something that fits so you can just, at very minimum, bring joy to the world.
Yes.
Because, oh gosh, I wish I could, let's see if I can remember this quote off the top of my head. With the world. Oh, here it is. Don't ask what the world needs. Instead, oh gosh, don't ask what the world needs. Instead, something to the effect of like, do what makes you happy, or do what makes you come alive, because what the world needs are more people who've come alive.
Oh, yes. Honestly, that I want to write that down and print it on like a mug or something, because that is 100% true. I feel like a lot of people are out there doing the motions, just going through the motions. And again, I know you've been trying to wrap this up. It's like, somebody give her a wrap it up box, but I'm just gonna, no. One more thing. I swear there are so many people who are going through the motions, whether they're new grads or whether they've been out for 15, 20 plus years, but they are taking up a body in a job where there is probably a therapist who would just be chomping at the bit to get that job. And they would bring all of this excitement and enthusiasm, whether from another setting or from being maybe a new grad or just getting back into it after years out, maybe raising some kids. But there is someone out there who is dying to take that job and bring their best to it. And so don't feel like leaving your job is somehow letting your patients down or abandoning. Yes.
Yeah.
Honestly, if you're feeling burnt out and miserable and just overwhelmed, there is a way to use your skills and your education in a way where you are so freaking happy and you're out there bringing so much joy to the world. And it might take a few tries to get it right. But when you nail it and you dial it in and you're a healthy, happy version of yourself, I swear that the world needs that. We're in such weird times. There's so much just angst out there in the world.
Yeah.
So you owe it to the world. You know, the world is filled with patients.
Preach.
Yeah, mic drop. No, but the world is filled with people who need you to bring light to the world. That's how I look at it. Is if you're a happy person, it's not being selfish. You're taking care of yourself. It's the oxygen mask.
Right. It's a pretty therapeutic use of self too.
Yes.
You know, is to be a human who's who has managed to stay lit in the midst of just human life.
Yes.
So Meredith, thanks for being one of those people, and thanks for helping forge this path forward. And it means a lot that you've chosen to take time and come and be with us.
Thank you.
So truly, thank you so much, Meredith.
Thank you. I've had a wonderful time on this show. I love that we got real deep. Thank you for having me. It was awesome.
You bet. Bye.
Bye.
This is a short quote from Glennon Doyle in her book called Untamed. The braver I am, the luckier I get.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of the Home Health Occupational Therapy Explore podcast. If you want to stay updated or get more deeply involved with our why, which is inspiring possibility and nourishment for the home health OT mindset, go to tillandwater.com and sign up for our emails. Sounds silly, but this one step could help inspire a paradigm shift for your practice. And if this message can help someone you know, please share it with them. And until next time, keep stirring your inspiration.